Welcome to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox.
And Andrew Hansen.
And honestly, and we talked about this off air, I really debated whether I wanted to do a show this week. And ultimately, I landed on the fact that I can't do one next week. You're out on Valentine's Day, so we may or may not do the usual, like, call... have Hansen as a guest on his own show from somewhere else, but
we like to do that. We spread our travels around and mix in a, you know, every 6 months or so a remote show.
My favorite one of all time was the New Orleans one.
Was it?
Because I was in New Orleans.
Yeah.
I would consider doing the show permanently in New Orleans. Yeah. Anyway, before I go into a complete digression, but this week I was on like my usual routine, and you know, it's like ingrained in me now is, you know, go downstairs, coffee, dog goes outside, ESPN goes on. I fire up the laptop, do a little bit of work. ESPN's on in the background. I leave, you know, but the routine involves I'm watching ESPN. This week I did not want to watch ESPN. Simply because, you know, unless you've been living under a rock, you know that Kobe Bryant and eight others passed away tragically in a helicopter accident in Calabasas, like just north of L.A. On Sunday. And I know you and I had some thoughts about it. Like, I found out about it. Maggie and I were driving to a girls' baseball practice down in Boston. First of all, I'm listening to music cranked up full blast, and she's like, "Dad, turn it down," because she got the notification on her phone from ESPN. My first thought was, you know, I need to know more. I need to know more about it. And then as kind of things started to emerge with it, you come to find out that he's with his 13-year-old daughter. They're going to a travel game. They took off from John Wayne Airport, which is, you know, I'm old enough to remember when John Wayne Airport was a little tiny building. Now it's a big, real grown-up airport. They took off from John Wayne, and they were just going to basically north of L.A. on a Sunday. You know, it's kind of one of those, Maggie and I were driving to a practice, you know, and it's a, for all intents and purposes, a travel practice. We're kind of doing the same stuff that they're doing, that everybody's doing, whether you're driving your kid to hockey, whether you're flying to Florida for a tournament or showcase or whatever. And, you know, regardless of your feelings about travel sports, you know, and I have some feelings about them, but regardless of your feelings about them, you know, this is generally a fun occasion. You're in the car doing what we're doing. You're listening to music, you're cracking jokes, you're eating snacks, you know, just kind of doing, kind of having normal sort of family time.
And maybe traveling with a teammate or two.
And in that case, traveling with a couple teammates. One of them, of course, and if you haven't read it, there is a great letter on ESPN from Tony Altobelli, who is the brother of John Altobelli, who was the coach at Orange Coast College.
The baseball coach. The
baseball coach at OCC. And, you know, just wrote a really great tribute. And, you know, you talk, OCC is a junior college. I still remember, though, I mean, it's, I would say, one of the premier junior college baseball programs in the country, just because of the talent pool. There were kids, I would say, one of the best kids that I played with in high school went to OCC. And that was, you know, your opportunity if your grades weren't quite where they needed to be or you had been overlooked by a D1 program. That was where you would go to get your shot. And the reason that it was a good program and has been a good program is because of the relationships that he had with D1 coaches and with other people within the world of baseball. And that tells you kind of everything about how he was thought of. You know, so you have him, Coach Altobelli, his wife, their daughter. You had Kobe and his daughter Gianna, and then you had another mother and daughter. But you know, it just, the whole thing sucks, and so I went on a media fast because there was nothing good on any news source at all, and so really all I've done all week is listen to Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah, I can't blame you.
It's the perfect escapism.
Yeah, I can't blame you. What an incredible story, an incident felt around the world. And I know it was different for you than a lot of us, too, because you grew up in Lakerland, and Kobe was a star for your favorite team.
Yeah.
Growing up.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we talked about it. 96, he got drafted 13th overall by
Charlotte.
I wanted to call him Carolina, but they've bounced around to 14 different markets by then. And I don't know exactly how it came. Well, first of all, he was big before then because he went to prom with Brandy.
Right.
And then he, you know, bounces around a little bit. I don't know how it came about that he wound up getting traded to the Lakers, but he did. And
Jerry West stepped in.
He may have played. It's just another iteration of the Laker luck that we were talking about a few weeks ago, where you win a coin flip and you wind up with Magic Johnson, and then you trade away Dan Ford and you wind up with James Worthy.
Yeah, you know, the fun story about Jerry West and Kobe, one of them, is that when they had the Lakers had Kobe in for a workout, Jerry West brought in Michael Cooper to defend him. And
defensive player of the year multiple times.
And Kobe just ruined him. And Jerry West shut down the workout. He said, "I've seen enough," and, you know, started strategizing then how we can get him. And sure enough, he did whatever was necessary to get him into the purple and gold.
And what people kind of forget is he wasn't a starter right away. And so it was always a treat to see him play those first couple years. And so looking at the stats, 96-97, he started six games, played 15 minutes a game. So definitely a role player, but they had the luxury at that point in time that they had Shaquille O'Neal that they had signed and a more veteran team that they could afford to put this guy in the backseat, not make him shoulder the load.
Then, he was only 18 years old.
He was 18. He was a kid. Then year two, he starts one game out of 79 and winds up, I don't remember how it happened, and I have no reliable source. We're at a restaurant somewhere, and like in the front counter, on the front counter, they had this 97-98 Lakers schedule, and it was it was back in the 90s when like everybody had Swiss Army knives on their keychains. Why, I don't know. but somehow we were standing there and like talking to the server or whatever. I couldn't even, it was like some bar down by the beach where I grew up. And we managed to get away with this like 6x3 Lakers schedule banner out of this bar. Like, not an easy thing to steal, but we like legit took it down and stole it. And it went up. We were living in a place. It's funny talking about this stuff because it's ridiculous. And yeah. I realize how ridiculous it is now. We were living in a place that was one house back from the beach that we called Stonehenge.
Okay.
I don't know why. and the back room of Stonehenge was, it had a view of the ocean. We were paying $1,100 a month rent too. I mean, it's like a different planet, different era. But we were paying no rent for a place that had a view of the Pacific Ocean. And we took this massive Lakers banner and hung it up in this room so that for the sole purpose, and it turned into every time Kobe played, we would write down the number of points that he scored.
Really?
Yeah. And like, I still remember looking at the thing, and it had, you know, at the end of the year, the high point total was 33. You know, and we had like started it, but it became this routine, like wake up in the morning, if we hadn't watched the game, figure out how many points he scored and put that up on the thing.
So it was 6 feet by 3 feet?
Yeah. I mean, it was like, it was this room had like a pitched ceiling. So we put it like in the crown of the ceiling. Okay. You have to like climb up to write down the number of points that he, so
imagine if you had lived in that building for all those years, you wouldn't have had enough room on that 6 foot by 3 foot poster to put all those numbers, including an 81,
I know,
to get that's over 30,000 points.
Right. No, that was just 1 year. That was year two. I don't know where it is. I hope that somebody kept it somewhere, but guys have been married and divorced and kids and whatever. Like, I mean, it really, truly was.
If that thing is still
it was an amazing
alive,
place.
It has to be tattered.
The back room was, we used to refer to as the black hole, because all matter that entered the black hole couldn't get out. Like, because, no, you'd sit in there. We had a couple couches, and there was a TV, and you had a back door that opened up to the ocean, and the ocean breeze coming. Like, why would you ever leave? Why did I ever leave? I mean, I had to grow up and have kids and get married. Well, not in that order, get married and have kids. But, yeah, so this is a guy that we grew up with, you know, and he was ours. Like, I mean, as much as people want to say, like, you know, yeah, we had so much respect for him. We always had respect for him. Lies. Like, because there was a period of time in the early 2000s where it seemed like it was everybody's hobby to come down on this guy. And he just won and won and went about his business. And really, like, all you can ask of anybody, yeah, he made mistakes. And he made one particularly egregious one that, hey, it is what it is. Like, I, you know, I'm sure if you had asked him on the day he died if he could do anything to fix that, he would have told you, absolutely, I would have done everything in my power not to do, not to have that happen. But in his case, you have a human being who learned from the errors of his ways. By all accounts, great dad, was sort of, you know, and I said it off air, you get the feeling that his best work was still to come. Because, you know, I said to Maggie after it happened, like, that guy, I would be shocked. I would put him as the most competitive human being on the planet. 7 billion people, and that's the guy.
I mean, there's certainly a lot of anecdotal evidence to support that. And that's one of the fun parts, I think, about this, is as people celebrate him, remember him, they share all these stories that really are pretty unique. I mean, he certainly patterned himself after Michael Jordan, probably the greatest of all time, and he came close. I don't think he matched Jordan, but probably matched him in competitiveness. I mean, those two are way up there for sure.
It's, I mean, it's two different styles of player. And Jordan came in as Air Jordan, was the high-flying guy and built his game later. Kobe, you know, by the time he was done playing, there the cupboard was bare. And you're looking at that. I don't know if you watched that last game that he played where he scored 60 against the Jazz, but some of the guys who are playing for the Lakers, you're like, I just rolled a side eye. Like,
right.
Those aren't top caliber NBA players. And, you know, you have a guy who's still laying it out, giving everything he can. So, you know, and I guess the other thing, too, is you look at, to go back to Altobelli, the coach at OCC, he had been there for 27 years, won the junior college championship in Southern California, for California last year, which is that's a good feat. I think they won 36 or 39 games, but he's getting some recognition for everything that he accomplished over the years. And I will say, without a doubt, it sucks. Like, you know, you have a guy who fundraised to the tune of $3 million for the OCC program to make the stadium as good as it possibly could be. His brother Tony, that I referred to earlier, was the sports information director. And when you read about Tony for the opening game of OCC season, which everybody said, you know, are we going to play it or not? Are we even going to play a season? Everybody involved with the program was like, no, we need to play. It's what he would have wanted us to do. But Tony was there doing, and I'm reading this going, this is, you know, I can identify with this. He's running the scoreboard. He's grabbing the lineups, running off the programs before the game, doing the public address. Like, it's, you know, these are, and I'm not minimizing it when I say this. There are people like that all over the country who really give selflessly for others. And it's rare that we recognize those people while they're still alive. Really rare. But you look at a guy like this who had dedicated himself to his career there, and it sucks beyond words that I can say that he's no longer with us, but he's getting recognition, and recognition that he deserves and probably wouldn't have ever gotten.
Yeah, it's one of those reminders to, you know, say positive things and, you know, show your support for these people.
I'm not saying anything positive.
while they're here and, you know, share those sentiments. He certainly deserved it. One of the crazy things about that story was his brother had to write the press release in his job as the brother, but just really tough situation for him. But the tributes are, you know, quite wide ranging, and you know, it's surprising to me some of them how far they spread. You know, just in the NBA, of course, you had all these teams taking the 24-second violation on purpose to start the game because he wore number 24. You saw some teams take 8-second backcourt violations because he also wore jersey number 8. My favorite was Minnesota, and Andrew Wiggins won the jump ball. Karl Anthony Towns tapped it back to him, and he placed the ball on the free throw line in Minnesota where Kobe passed Jordan on the all-time scoring list. You know, so when Kobe passed Jordan to become number 3, that's where it happened. So Wiggins put the ball on the free throw line, 8-second clock violation, and that was how Minnesota paid tribute to Kobe. And of course, just unbelievable that it was the night before that LeBron had passed Kobe to go into third all-time in scoring, and Kobe had tweeted about it, and LeBron had sat in the locker room and given like a 4-minute tribute to Kobe. So I think there's a good chance Kobe heard that either Saturday night or Sunday morning. So, you know, certainly guys like Kobe got a lot of these tributes while they're still alive. But the tributes for Kobe have even gone to the PGA Tour. Tony Finau, you know, they're playing right now in Arizona at the Waste Management Open. You know, it always always coincides with the Super Bowl.
Have you been to that?
I haven't been to it.
Oh, my God,
no.
Dude. We should go one year.
That'd be fun.
Oh, my God. It's so much fun.
Yeah, so that's where, you know, listeners will probably recognize and remember it's that 16th
hole.
The par 3 where
it's
Tiger...
like stadium golf.
Yeah, Tiger hit that hole in one. And so this week, some of the golfers paid tribute to Kobe at that hole. Tony Finau came out in a Kobe jersey and played the hole in a Kobe jersey along with his purple and gold golf spikes. And Tony Finau grew up in Utah and Nevada. So he grew up a Lakers fan. He said Kobe was his hero. And he said with so much pride how this is the only basketball jersey I own. And so I thought this was the perfect time to bring it out. Same thing with Justin Thomas. He wore Kobe's high school jersey from Lower Merion, number 33, played the hole in that jersey. And, you know, some of you may have heard the interview that Tiger Woods gave. He found out about the news on Sunday when he finished his round, and his caddy told him as he was walking towards an interview. And so then just a couple minutes later, he's doing an interview and paid tribute to Kobe and just talked about his competitive fire. And, of course, Tiger's the same way, so they probably looked at each other as, you know, very close.
Like contemporaries almost.
Contemporaries, yeah. And then you hear stories about how when Tiger was playing that day, people were yelling from the galleries, "Do it for Mamba," and he didn't know what they were talking about. And I was wondering that as I was watching, do these guys know? So he didn't find out until after the round, but, you know, talked just about Kobe's competitive fire. And he even remembered on the spot that time when Kobe tore his Achilles in a game, still walked to the free throw line, made both free throws, and then walked off the court late in the game, close game, and just to show what kind of a competitor he was.
Right. And, well, even the little things, too, where, you know, kids who are my kid's age will go and hit and pick up balls in the bucket and the player that they yell when they're trying to make the balls in the bucket is Kobe. So, I mean, and I don't know why that is. Like, Maggie had never seen Kobe play until she watched the first quarter of his game, his final game against Utah. And I said, you know, and we don't watch basketball in our house like we do baseball. But I said, oh, 60, no big deal. He scored 81 in a game and her jaw hit the floor. At the floor, like, that's just Monopoly money, dude. Those are crazy numbers. So
second most ever.
But I mean, you're talking things that are in the stratosphere. So the tributes have been far and wide. You said Tony Finau, and all I can think about is him having that hole in one at Augusta.
Oh, gosh.
And that video of him dislocating his ankle and then putting it right back in. Like,
and
I
then
can't,
playing the next day.
I know. And, like, you talk about him, and, like, it just makes my body hurt. Like, I see the guy, and it just makes me hurt. So, anyway, for an entirely different reason. All right. So, So 20 minutes. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
You want me to transition this to the Super Bowl?
No, we are going to talk about the Super Bowl and the complete flip side of sorrow, which is Gronk.
Yes.
Like, Gronk is the opposite of being sad. Gronk was on Good Morning America this morning, which my wife had on, and I'm sitting there. Maybe I'd come back from running, whatever. Maggie and I had just come back from the gym. And Gronk is there with a bunch of kids in Kansas City who have put together some cool nonprofit. I don't remember what it was, but it was for the work that they had done was impressive. And they were down, I think they were down in Miami for some kind of event, being interviewed, whatever. And Gronk went like full Oprah, handing these kids Super Bowl tickets. And he's wearing a tank top and saying to these kids, and you get a ticket, and you get it. Like, I mean, just being Gronk. But then the complete money quote, and I think it might have been Strahan who called him out on it, but he said, Gronk goes, yeah, you know, it's weird being down here. It's weird not being in the Super Bowl.
There's only so many guys who can say that.
Yeah. For the last 5 years, he was in the Super Bowl.
Just strange on Super Bowl Sunday not to be playing in it.
No,
not strange to be there. Like, wow, this is a dream come true. I'm in the Super Bowl.
Right, I'm not
strange
playing.
Not to be there.
Right.
Playing. Can you imagine being Gronk?
What, no.
What his week, month, year is like in retirement?
No, not even close.
And the amount of opportunities he gets and the variety of them, whether it's acting or, you know, appearing on this show or that show or helping this charity or that one, I mean, endless.
He seems like a happy dude. And you figure he's been around long enough that you would figure that if he were a jerk, it would have long since gotten out where people would have been like, dude, that guy is just brutal. It would have been like David Sims and Tin Cup. Like, he might act that way, but it's old people, children, and dogs. You should see what happens when he gets around them. We've never heard that from Gronk.
No.
Like, I remember a few years ago, I had a client up in the Lakes region who he happened to be there Memorial Day weekend, and it's a beach bar right on Winnipesaukee. He's there. And so she texts me and says, I have pictures of him there. He's posing with people. Can we get him up on Facebook? And testament to how much people like that guy is that was far and away the most reach that any of the posts we really ever did for them got, because it's him. And everybody's like, oh, my God, like, he's just there hanging out, having whatever Gronk specials at the bar, Red Bull vodka. And that was just kind of, that's just him, but just a happy dude. But so he's down there. I guess on the other side of the coin, Tom Brady posted a picture. Did you see that?
I heard about it this morning.
Okay. So the picture shows him. He could be walking into a tunnel. The way that it's taken, everything is in shadow. So it's just a silhouette of him. He could be walking into a tunnel. In which case, maybe his career is over. He could be walking out of a tunnel, in which case he's getting ready to play. Like, here's my new beginning and I'm going somewhere else. It could mean nothing. There's no caption that goes along with it. He could just be screwing with us.
I unfortunately haven't seen it yet.
Hang on,
but I heard a description of it. I also heard that Adam Schefter soon after that tweeted and claimed that it does not have anything to do with his playing future. I don't know what prompted that, but certainly a strange picture to tweet at this juncture with all the uncertainty about whether he'll play for the Patriots or not.
There he is. I just handed Hansen my laptop.
It looks like he's walking out of the stadium, doesn't it?
I have no idea, man.
It's hard to tell.
I mean, it's like, it's the classic, is the dress blue or purple or whatever that whole thing was. Like, you know, this happens about once a year that something gets posted on the internet and we have a bunch of arguments as to whether he's coming or going or whether it said Yanni or whatever, you know, but I mean, this is what we do.
If he's trying to send a photo that's sort of you could go either way with it. I think it's perfect. As I look at it a little bit more closely, I think he's walking into the stadium.
I don't know.
It's so hard to tell.
It's really hard to, like, the way that his foot is pointing, it looks like he's walking in because nobody's foot would point that way.
Right.
I mean, we're analyzing this like it's a Zapruder film. Like,
maybe what he's doing is he's visualizing, I want to be walking into the Super Bowl next year, wherever it is. I don't know where it is. It's just going to be in some stadium. I don't know what team I'm going to be on, but I'm going to walk into that stadium because I'm going to play in the Super Bowl next year.
And that's it. So, I mean, it could be, I don't know. It's many things. It really is many things. So this was another thing, too. I guess as we're talking about the Super Bowl, and I'm not quite sure. So both towns that are in the Super Bowl this year are good food places. Kansas City, of course, legendary barbecue.
Right.
Like, I could, if anybody ever wanted to go on a barbecue tour there, I could take you there for a week. We would never eat at the same place twice, although there are some places you would want to eat at twice or more than twice. But we'd go to Bryant's, Oklahoma Joe's, Gates, Rosedale. Like, the list just never ends. Jack Stack, Smokehouse. Like, I mean, I'm getting hungry. Although there is a Smokehouse down 101 that you and I have been there. I cannot argue with that. That place would do just fine if it were in Kansas City. But so somebody came up with nachos that were Kansas City inspired versus the San Francisco inspired nachos, because this is what we do. Chowder nachos for the San Francisco ones.
Really?
I'm not quite sure what to make of this.
That seems like it'd be a little bit more appropriate for a Patriots Super Bowl.
I don't know. I mean, it's a Bay. They're claiming clam chowder as a Bay Area staple, but anyway, these nachos have, clam juice, clams, thyme leaves, cream cheese, black pepper, lemon zest, parsley, chips, and a sourdough boule. Like, when I think of San Francisco, I think of Ghirardelli chocolate, sourdough, great Italian food. I mean, there's no shortage of wonderful things. Like, that's one of the top food towns in the United States, but Kansas City isn't, that's not a bad spot either. So, but again, it's Super Bowl week, and we've probably had one too many weeks, not to mention that they threw that touch football game in the middle called the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, I didn't even watch that.
No, I don't either. I kept getting notifications from DraftKings saying, oh yeah, hey, lay action on the Pro Bowl. I'm like, this to me seems like this would be the easiest game to throw.
Right.
If you were an NFL player. Like, Do I care? No.
Yeah, and they don't.
I'm not playing for the chip. I'm good.
Right.
It doesn't matter. But yeah, so they really don't. So anyway, but I guess speaking of the betting that goes on, Chiefs currently installed as 1.5-point favorites, which is, for all intents and purposes, a pick 'em.
Correct.
And
rare in the Super Bowl. There's only been a handful of times that the spread has been less than 3 points.
Since you tend to know these things, what happens when the spread is less than 3 points?
I didn't get that stat, but another stat that's not really going to be relevant this year is that in the Super Bowl, the vast majority of favorites, when they win, they cover the spread, and that usually you have a bigger spread, 6-7 points.
Right.
So you don't get as many close games with some of these bigger favorites in the Super Bowl as you might imagine. I guess file that away for later years because this year we have the close spread.
All right. So you were talking about prop bets that you had seen.
Well, yeah. One thing I want to mention is for those who use DraftKings here in New Hampshire, they have a free contest on there with prizes. So it's free to enter, but you can win a prize. And it's 15 different props that you have to pick. Some of them have multiple outcomes, like who's going to have the most receiving yards, who's going to win the MVP. There's actually one for who's going to have the most tackles, which is kind of fun. You actually start to look at some defensive statistics. But there's a couple on there that I think, we might be able to help you with if some of the rumors are correct. And one of them kind of connects with Kobe Bryant. So one of the prop questions is, what color is the Gatorade bath going to be? And there's been a lot of speculation this week that it's going to be purple in honor of Kobe as a tribute. And Roger Goodell has talked about having some sort of tribute for Kobe. Maybe it'll be something else. Maybe it'll be multiple things. But apparently there was, you know, you can bet these things in different places. And there was a place apparently where betting on purple was 12-1 initially. And then all of a sudden it became the favorite. You know, the odds just changed drastically because there's this rumor going around that it's going to be purple. So in this free prop contest on DraftKings that I mentioned, that's one of the props. And it's, I think there are six options, and one of them is, it is other or no shower.
Field.
So you're not betting on red or yellow or blue. You bet on other, and you also get the no shower. So if they don't do a Gatorade bath on the winning coach, you win that way too.
Huh.
So to me, it's the right play on that one.
Huh. Okay. I guess the thing that really messes with my head with this is, first of all, I mean, there's just so many like layers of things as just a human being who doesn't go to the Super Bowl or play in the Super Bowl. First of all, if you're a player and somebody hands you Gatorade and it's not the right flavor Gatorade for you, do you, no, send it back?
Well, if you're Tom Brady, you do.
Okay.
I mean, you've thought about these things, whether you're even going to drink the Gatorade.
Well, that's fair because, I mean, sometimes you don't want to drink Gatorade because sugar, cramping, whatever. Like, I understand that. What I'm saying is, like, do the equipment managers know that player X do not give him red Gatorade? He's allergic to that food dye. And then the other thing is, like, is there, on both sides, are there dedicated Gatorade tubs? And so when a player, when the game is well in hand, and back in the day it would have been Harry Carson, you know, who started this whole thing, going to grab it, is there somebody who's like, no, that's the official Gatorade? Like, but what's to stop the guy from just grabbing a jug?
Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, a lot goes into it.
No, the real one is here. That's the wrong. Oh, dude, I just bet $10,000. Right. Now I lost.
Right. I mean, it's possible.
Because you grabbed the wrong color.
It's possible, although I don't know. I mean, how many sidelines have multiple colors of Gatorade during each Super Bowl?
I don't know
if they have multiple.
They have money for it. I mean, back in the day, I used to like argue with the Dodgers about whether the minor league affiliate or the Dodgers needed to be the ones who were buying the Gatorade. And that was back in the Frank McCourt days. When Frank McCourt didn't want to shell out, it's 110 degrees in San Bernardino, and we're arguing about $100 worth of Gatorade for a homestand. Like, really, really, you're really? We're arguing about this now. And so finally, on principle, I'm like, you know what? The poorest guy in the room is going to buy the Gatorade.
Right.
Me.
Right. Well,
it's my gift. $100 worth of Gatorade.
Yeah, I mean, to get back to Tom Brady and Gronk and the Patriots. I do think that some teams would have a say in this in one way or another. I heard a story this week about somebody who was at a hotel before one of the Patriots Super Bowls. He found out the Patriots were staying there. He was in town for the game. And he heard that the Patriots, he said it was Bill Belichick, but maybe it was somebody on behalf of the Patriots, instructed the waitstaff at that hotel to not look the players in the eye. And nobody can wear anything other than Patriots gear in this hotel. So they were trying to create this haven for the Patriots where it was only Patriots gear, only Patriot fans, nobody look at the players. I mean, really just trying to cross every T, dot every I.
We're not looking at the players because we're worried that they're going to like turn to stone?
Yeah, I don't know.
Weird.
Kind of strange. But if you think about that type of preparation and planning an execution with something as far away from the game as how people are acting in the hotel, then, you know, you figure that some of these teams know whether there's multiple flavors of Gatorade all the way down the line.
Yeah, there are some people who I think kind of act on a different plane than the rest of us do because, like, some days it's sort of a miracle. I don't know, earlier this week, I didn't shower on one day until like 2 p.m. I just got engrossed in work. And it, like, something as simple and elementary as showering didn't happen. And then you look at people who are planning to this extent and thinking through things to that extent. And I'm like, you wonder how much of it is for them and their comfort level and how much of it the players actually even notice. Like, because let's face it, you know, I didn't come here to play school. I came here to play football. Like that's it. Like you might have things that you're trying to do to assist these guys subliminally, but at the end of the day, that's what matters most is what happens between those lines for those 60 minutes of clock time. That's it. So I don't know. I agree that preparation is essential. It just goes to like which level of preparation are you going to, like the A level of preparation or the H level?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I know one thing the San Francisco 49ers have done this year is multiple times they've stayed on the East Coast in preparation for an East Coast game. So after week one, they were going to play Cincinnati. And what they did was they stayed in Ohio to continue to be used to the time zone, avoid the back and forth travel. And then it was a pick'em game basically, and they just blitzed the Bengals. And that was before everybody knew how bad the Bengals were and how good the 49ers were. I mean, last year they were 4-12.
Right.
So Shanahan has those traits too. Well, and the 49ers organization as a whole.
But to me, though, the time zone thing is a straight common sense thing. If you have to go there and back and there and back, like, why would you even bother adjusting? You're already there.
Well, it makes logical sense, but not all NFL teams do it.
Right.
So they went out of their way to do it. And I understand they've been in Miami for a while. You know, they're not just waiting to the last second to get there. I mean, they're there getting oriented. And, you know, it for somebody like Shanahan, who's, you know, becoming more and more prominent as a star coach, that's part of what goes into it. Just like Belichick and the Patriots is the travel. And then you hear about scripting the plays. I mean, it's just that's his nature.
Yeah.
And he's going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see. It's impressive to me that Kyle Shanahan has gotten to where he's gotten as fast as he's gotten there. You know, and there are some times that you look at guys who are getting opportunities in the NFL, and it's easy to say that a coach gets an opportunity because of his lineage.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Shanahan, obviously his dad won some Super Bowls, and, you know, I don't know, not the greatest. He's not in that rarefied era of NFL coaches, but he's in that second tier of all-timers, like, certainly. And, you know, there are some times that teams will bring a guy in, and they'll bring him in. You know, Lane Kiffin is one example. Bring him in because his dad, Monty, was one of the most renowned defensive coordinators in football, and he flamed out when he was a Raider guy, and the Raiders thought they had the boy genius. But over and over and over again, you have guys who might have more experience who are being overlooked or might potentially be a better fit being overlooked because they don't have maybe a recognizable name or a pedigree. Shanahan is one who I really believe has lived up to it in the early going. So at the very least, I think we're going to get some fireworks on Sunday. So it'll be a lot of fun to watch. So, and to answer the question from earlier, there has been exactly one game settled by fewer than 3 points. One. That is, do you know which one? Harry knows.
Oh, well, it must have been the Bills then.
It was the Scott Norwood game.
22-21?
Giants 20, Bills 19.
2019.
Yeah. It would have been 22-20 if Norwood made that field goal.
Right.
And then there have been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 that have been settled by three or fewer, or three, I guess. So you have
Patriots, Rams, Eagles.
7 out of 54. So what does that come up to? That's roughly, I don't know, 11-12% of the games,
right,
that have been settled by a field goal or less, which I don't know what the distribution looks like in real life in the NFL, but I have to believe that regular season games tend to be closer than the Super Bowl.
Yep. Yeah, it's going to be fun. So another stat as you're looking at this prop contest is the MVP, and the majority of MVPs have been a quarterback.
Yep.
So pretty safe to pick the quarterback of the team that you think is going to win. Another fun one they have on there, you know, it's kind of fun where you just have to sort of think about it and do different research than you normally do, is the jersey number of the first player to get a rushing or receiving touchdown, and it's over under 26.5.
Okay.
So what you have to do is you have to go and look at the jersey numbers of all the different players, and it's not something you normally think about, who's wearing what number. And so then you start to think about it in general. Well, all the receivers are going to wear something in the 80s. But if you look
at the ones now, obviously, this over the years, this has changed. So confuses all of us.
Yeah. So if you look at these particular teams, the vast majority of the skill position players in this game were under either 26 or under.
Huh.
A lot of the running backs.
Yeah.
Quarterbacks.
Well, Tyreek Hill wears 10. Mahomes wears 15.
Yep. Damian Williams.
Yep.
I don't remember them all offhand, but Mostert.
Hardman, 17. Mostert's 31. So,
yeah. So, Eddie, it was something like a 2-to-1 ratio of the guys who you would most expect to score are under 26.5. So, I went under on that one.
You've already gone through this. So, in a regular NFL game, and this is looking at stats, like, this is so funny. Between 2003 and 2013, the key numbers are 3 and 7.
Right.
So 15% of games ended in 3, 9% of games ended margin of victory in 7.
Exactly 7. Yeah.
So, but of these games, you have, I'm going to say 3% were 1, 3% were 2, and 15% were 3. So that's 21% in a real NFL game have a margin of 3 or fewer. In the Super Bowl,
we said what, 11 or 12?
It's 12.9.
Yep.
So
keep that in mind.
There you go. For whatever reason, the Super Bowl has a bigger spread.
And on DraftKings, you can wager on the, you can get an alternate point spread other than just 1.5.
Right.
You can bet on whether they're going to win by a certain range of points. So that's kind of fun. But in thinking about the game as a whole, I've been all over the Chiefs here throughout the playoffs and felt really good about them, based on the numbers, based on the eye test. And, I've just haven't had quite that strong of a feeling going into the Super Bowl, because you watch the Niners just dismantle the Packers, and their pass rush is dominant now that they've got everybody back and healthy. The way they ran the ball was phenomenal. Mostert was just unstoppable. And they've got that makeup of the classic traditional football team, championship team. They can run the ball and they can play defense. So there's a lot to be said for the 49ers. So it makes me a little more cautious on Kansas City. But some of the stats I've been looking at, in the red zone, San Francisco has only the 21st best offense, and they have the 25th ranked red zone defense.
Huh.
So good chance that Kansas City will be a little bit more successful at scoring touchdowns as opposed to field goals. How do you beat San Francisco in this tough pass defense? Well, they're number one against passing offenses when they don't run a play action. But if they use the play action, they're only ranked 18th. And I'm pretty sure the folks in Kansas City are going to know that stat and go a little bit heavier on the play action.
If you know it up here, they know it there.
Exactly.
But then Kansas City, and even though they do not have what you would consider to be a strong ground game, they have made up for it with kind of the gadgety plays and the jet sweeps that they're using Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman, basically getting the football to these guys. And for all intents and purposes, it's like running a pitch play left or right, but Tyreek Hill is awfully hard to catch when he's got a full head of steam if he's just coming across the line. That makes things...
He's hard to stop no matter where he is, how fast he's going.
Right.
If he's running forwards, backwards, no matter what.
But, I mean, you look at that and you say, all right, you can run out of that play action, but then there are other looks that you can give him. And with 2 weeks to prepare, it's going to make them... You got to believe that Andy Reid's going to empty out everything he's got to try to get himself a Super Bowl, because you never know. Today might be the only day he's got to get after it.
Yeah, and the bigger point there with Hill is he's the fastest guy in the field.
Oh, and yeah.
They're going to find ways to get him the ball. They're going to take advantage of his speed. San Francisco doesn't really have an answer for that, and I think that's one of the big fears for the 49ers is, can they stop him from beating them over the top? you know, because we know Mahomes can air it out. Doesn't matter how far Hill has gone down the field, he can get it to him.
It's crazy. Like, the arm strength that kid has just blows my mind. So, what else? You have more stats.
Yeah, one more stat is, you worried about the 49ers pass rush if you're a Chiefs fan, but Kansas City's done a pretty good job of protecting Mahomes, and obviously he's got the fleet feet. We talked about that amazing run he had against the Titans, but he's only been sacked twice in 72 pass plays during the postseason. So if they can keep that ratio going, avoid the stack, avoid the turnover, you know, sack fumble type thing from Bosa, then you know, I like their chances even more. And bottom line is, I think Mahomes is the best player on the field. And I think Garoppolo is a fine quarterback. You know, he can get it done, but Mahomes just is something special.
Yeah, he certainly is, and a lot of fun to watch. And I don't know. It's hard to argue against him. You know, I would say the team that has the best player. I'm sure there are stats on that too. The team that has the player that is graded out the highest has won X percentage of Super Bowls. But I don't know. It's hard to it's hard to go against that. But honestly, all it takes is one turn of an ankle, and all bets are still on. But you know,
one funny bounce of that pigskin.
Right. That's what can happen when you have two good teams playing. So should be a lot of fun. Again, I'm going to make the argument that the NFL should make the game earlier. This is ridiculous that it's basically a 7 o'clock start. And by the time you have that ridiculous halftime show, it's midnight before anybody's going to bed. So bump it up earlier. Why wouldn't you? It's Sunday. And then the halftime show, which like you have minute-long performances of songs and everybody takes it seriously like it's a big deal, but I don't know. It's like somebody has their hand on the remote and is just flipping the channels way too fast, really, is how that halftime show tends to feel.
Yeah, I mean, is it just me or, you know, you can even wager on what songs are going to be sung, and I've heard folks talking about the different choices. I don't even know. I don't even recognize these songs.
Yeah, I'm just fine. Like, you know, I'm not the Shakira and J-Lo.
You probably do.
I do.
You
yes.
said something in a recent show. I don't know if our listeners really caught it, but
what did I
heard it. You said it was sort of just a comment to the side, a throwaway comment.
That's all of my comments.
It was full of insight into Lauren Fox.
What did I say?
You said, I don't forget things.
I don't.
I know.
The best
you
part.
Remember more movie quotes and song lyrics
dude,
than anybody
useless,
I know.
Useless. But yeah, I forgot to eat breakfast this morning. So, all right. Looking at what goes on here in town, because we have about 10 and a half minutes left to go. Unified basketball. You and I went to try to catch a game on Monday, or at least I went.
We talked about it. We texted back and forth.
Yeah. You had the good sense to actually check the schedule. I went there anyway, but there was no game. However, there is a game Tuesday.
And Monday.
Monday and Tuesday. Both at home?
Yes.
So if you are interested in going, I believe they're both in that 3 to 3:30 range. You can check the athletic department website or check the NHIAA website. But again, this is something that I've heard nothing but positive about. I am super excited to see it. Stopped in, saw a little bit of practice as well. Coach Campbell Kelly is right. She has more
partners
than she knows what to do with, which is just testament to the kids getting out there and realizing that, hey, this is a big thing and I want to be involved with it. So kudos to the kids for getting involved. Hopefully you and I'll get out there Monday/Tuesday for it. On the basketball side, I had a chance to catch up with one of the players who was reffing a youth basketball game while I was running the scoreboard and tormenting people with the horn and forgetting to start the clock back up. I mean, I must have set some kind of record. I forgot to start the clock back up like 12 times. But I guess the game against Londonderry, the boys won at 67-60 last Friday night. But they had been down 9 at the end of the first and came back, and I believe at halftime had a lead and ultimately won by 7. So that, after that loss last second to Wyndham, then a week off, basically, then you lose to Keene by 20, then to come back and beat Memorial by 5 and then beat Londonderry by 7, like two good solid wins, and now the boys team stands at 4-3.
Yeah, and we're recording this on Friday morning. Friday night, we're doing the broadcast, the game against Alvern. It's a team that's, you know, hovering around 500 as well. So hopefully that was a close, fun game that Bedford was victorious in. We can talk about that next week.
Yeah.
But if you missed it on Friday night, again, you can find those broadcasts on the YouTube page for BCTV.
Yes, and we'll throw some of them up on the Fox on Sports Facebook page. On the girls team that we did last Friday night, the defense that the Bulldogs had was stout. And the first half margin, they were up 29-8 at the half. Great D. Londonderry hadn't scored, I think, until about a minute left in the first.
Not too shabby, giving up 8 points and a half to a team that included Courtney Shea. She scored 17 points in the second half for Londonderry. So obviously they had very strong players. And you're right, really strong defensive performance.
Yeah, impressive to see. And then, of course, you get Isabella King on offense going crazy. I think she had 21 in the game.
24, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We missed one of them somewhere. And then Allie Morgan had picked up three fouls about 8 minutes and 7 seconds into the game. And you kind of go, uh-oh, you're losing your point guard, who's one of the best players in the state. And the bench picked up the slack pretty well. Some players came in, brought the ball up. Emma Rosenbaum did a great job with that, kind of controlling things. Sydney Grogan as well, another one. So the team really stepped up and didn't miss a beat. And then Allie started the second half, got a bucket pretty early, and she caught fire there in the second half also.
Yeah, you're right. Because of that foul trouble, she hadn't scored in the first half, but she scored 11 points in the second half. And yeah, everybody else sort of stepped up, handled the ball. Nice opportunity for everybody to face that adversity of not having Allie on the court, and they came out of it in a positive way. And you know, then Isabella King had 15 in the second half. So yeah, that was fun to get to do that game.
So the girls again tonight will go to Alvern and play. I can't remember Alvern's mascot.
I can't either. I don't think I've done an Alvern game yet.
I have not.
Of all the games and sports we've done.
I know.
No Alvern yet.
No Alvern. So this will be I guess there's a first time for anything, for everything. let's see what else. Around town, Little League signups are currently ongoing. For anybody who has a kid in Little League or Little League aged, which is ages 4 through 13, it's open to anybody in Bedford, but it's also now open to Merrimack and Milford, and it's been open to Amherst for a while. But you can go to Bedford LL and sign up, just the Bedford Little League website. Sign up your player now. And for those who are interested or old enough, there are a bunch of opportunities you want to make sure that you can take advantage of, namely evaluations for the older players. The AAA and majors players start on February 9th, and you can indicate when you sign up exactly the date that you're looking for evaluations. But then you start getting into winter workouts, which back when Maggie was younger, that wasn't really a thing. Like, you'd show up for your first day of practice, and like all of a sudden you have to get yourself ready for game number one. Well, now they have it where the kids can go to indoor workouts. They're going to be at the Sports Mill in Manchester this year, which is nice new facility, but the kids can go through their workouts there. And by the time the snow melts, which who knows, this year might be early, by the time the snow melts, they're a bit more baseball ready, which for me is a completely strange concept. Well, come on. It was sunny 300 days a year. We could go out and do whatever we want, we wanted to.
Hey, speaking of Little League.
Yes.
I'm just reminded, earlier this week, I had the pleasure of attending a seminar that was put on.
You went to that?
Yeah. It was called the Positive Coaching Alliance.
Yeah.
It was at McKelvey, and a representative of the Positive Coaching Alliance put on the seminar. It's about an hour and a half. We spent a half hour in the classroom, and then an hour in the cafeteria, which we basically turned into a gym. And it was really impressive. A lot of great stuff. The website is a great resource. But one of the takeaways was, you know, when you're coaching kids, and I think it applies even just to raising kids, the ratio of positive feedback to negative feedback. There've been a lot of studies done on this. The ideal ratio is 5 to 1.
5 positive to 1 negative.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, one of the points he made is it's easy as a coach to point out the negative because you're watching a play happen or a drill, whatever sport we're talking about, and it's everything is going the way it's supposed to, and then something pops out that you want to try to coach and improve, and so it's easy to point that out. But maybe you gotta think big picture here, how you're approaching these things and how things balance out over time. And, you know, let's say you're giving feedback and it's, you know, hey, I really like the way that you hustled on that play, but XYZ, you know, he said most kids only remember what you say after but. So it was just a really good overview of how do we approach this season? How do we approach feedback as a coach? You know, he suggested the 5 to 1 ratio.
So just some questions. What would they, because you were there and I wasn't, and I intended to go and didn't actually make it. When somebody says, what is negative? What do they consider to be negative?
You know, I think common sense, he didn't really define it, but I think anything probably along the lines of you failed.
Yeah. Okay.
You let me down by performing in that way.
If you're coaching little kids and you're saying you let me down by performing in that way.
No, but that's the message they get, right?
No, I know. I think there are certainly better ways to give feedback and have it be constructive instead of destructive feedback.
Right,
You know, you for those who are old enough to think about like the original Bad News Bears, I think about the coach of the Yankees yelling at his kid, you know, during the game. Like, to me, that is what I would consider the negative feedback. The positive feedback is hard because oftentimes if you're using positive feedback and you're using too much of it, a kid can hear good, 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 and assume that they're doing everything right. And it's kind of I'm trying to find the appropriate quote for it, but I'll stick with a Mark Twain one that was when I was 14, I couldn't believe how ignorant my father was. And when I turned 21, couldn't believe how much he had learned in 7 years. I don't think your father really learned all that much. It's just more that you were willing to listen. And no matter how much positive or constructive coaching you give, if you don't have a kid who's receptive and coachable, you could have best hitting coach or the best pitching coach on the planet. But if it's not going to be somebody who's receptive and ready, it'll fall on deaf ears regardless.
Yeah, it's a two-way street. But if you think about it again in the terms of teaching something,
yeah,
you know, you teach the fundamentals and hopefully they're listening and hopefully over time it becomes ingrained.
Yes. So with that in mind, I'm sure you're going to do a great job tonight calling the game with Corey. Be sure to give the score a lot.
Yes, absolutely. Before we finish, I want to give a shout out to my grandfather.
Yes.
Today is his 97th birthday out in Kansas. Leland, have a great birthday. And certainly on his behalf, I mean, I have to pick the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. Out there in Kansas, close by.
Does Leland know who he shares a birthday with?
Probably.
It is one of the most famous Americans. In fact, I think Maggie thinks it should be a national holiday.
Who's that?
He would have been 101 today. Jackie Robinson.
Oh, really?
Yep. So there you go. Two big, Leland Perry and Jackie Robinson. There you go. Born 4 years apart.
Love them both.
And, yep. So anyway, enjoy your week. Whatever you're doing, get outside and do something. Think snow. Yes. The end of next week, the forecast looks good because we need more natural snow for those of us who like to ski. Go cheer a team on, whether it's the unified team, boys team, girls team, whatever. Just get out there and go have fun. Enjoy it. It's part of living in this town. So wanted to thank everybody here at the station, George, Harry, Bill, and Colleen, my broadcast partner, Andrew Hansen. And you have been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.